Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Haunted Vermont podcast. My name is Paul Dosky, and joining us are two lovely ladies from, well, a paranormal group that name has been around since the foundation of it of 2004. However, we don't have the founder with us today, but we got two lovely ladies that are happy to come on board and share some stories and everything else. So I'm just going to stop blabbing and start introducing. So first up, we got the director of the paranormal group, Betty DuPont. And then we also have investigator Karen Keene. So welcome both.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Yep, Paranormal Investigators of New England. A lot of people just call us Pine, but it's just a big mouthful for to say. So we're glad to be here, Paul. Thank you.
No, you're very welcome. And, you know, like we kind of were talking about before we start, or I hit the record button, like I was invited to go do a little investigation with you guys back in, I want to say, 2015. I can't even remember anymore. It's been like probably 7 years or close to it anyway. But Jeff Stewart, he invited me to come hunt with you guys for the Hubbardton Battlefield. And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't catch anything that night. But I did have, like, my previous investigation where it was loads of everything going on that night.
It's always hit or miss.
It really is. Now, before we begin, Betty and Karen, could you tell us a little bit about yourself of, like, I guess, what kind of got you into the paranormal to begin with, and how did you guys end up joining the Paranormal Investigators of New England, aka Pine?
I'm Karen Keene. I live in Stowe from Montpelier. And I probably started a long time ago being interested in the paranormal. I'm going to try to not talk forever here, but, you know, little things, family ghost stories, things like that. Was always fascinated by anything unusual, including Bigfoot stories, things like that. But we had a couple cool ghost stories in my family that I would make a grandparent tell over and over again. So I already had a long time interest. And then I spent 17 years as a property tax assessor. And from time to time, a property owner would tell me a story or of something going on site, or I would have a weird feeling. I wasn't even into the paranormal at that point in time. But when my son, who's now about to be 18, was three, he and I had kind of a unique experience in a cemetery where we were there planting some flowers, and he saw an invisible child. I did not see it, but I knew after reading books, et cetera, when it comes to children, don't dismiss, because they have the ability to see more than we do on many occasions. So when he wanted to go play with this child in this small rural cemetery, I knew there was no child there but him. That piqued my interest. So I said, yeah, go ahead. He started trotting down a lane, probably four or five gravestones down, and stopped in his tracks. And I said, so where'd he go? And he goes, I don't know. And I said, what did he look like? And my son described this child to a T, right down to the color of his hair and what he was wearing. Of course, none of this I saw, but that piqued my interest. I told my parents this story, who lived next door to me. And of course, my father always thought any of my ghostly interests were weird. And when he heard this story, it piqued his interest, because we do have, believe it or not, a family member who was three at the time, passed away and was buried about two or three stones down. So that made me think, aha, there's something to this. And back, let me see, about maybe 11 years ago, 12 years ago, Ghost Hunters was really just getting going. And I was watching the show. And when I turned 40, I just dated myself, by the way, I asked for my 40th birthday to go investigate with them. And they just so happened to own a haunted inn not too terribly far away in New Hampshire. So I went on a weekend there and got to learn a little bit about the business, experience investigating, and actually had kind of an interesting experience with a K2 meter. And probably attended one more after that before I said, how do I become a paranormal investigator? And that's when I got on the search. There are several teams out there, but really Paranormal Investigators of New England had the website I was looking for, the professional looking website, and I like their theory, science-based. And that's where it all began. I applied back in, like I said, about 12 years ago, and had a little bit of a tryout period and was been with them ever since, and probably spent the last maybe 9 years as assistant director and case manager, just now stepping down to an investigator. So that was the long-winded version.
Yeah. And a wonderful case manager and assistant director, I might add.
Thank you. Maybe to come back one day when things aren't so busy, like you, kids take over and busyness. But I couldn't devote the time that this field needs. And believe it or not, it needs, you know, attention to detail and lots of time. But anyway, that's my story and I love it. And it gets more interesting every year.
It was not on my radar. It was not something I thought about or took the time about. I was pretty carefree until I started having a couple of experiences. And one of which, when I was about 18, a UFO experience, which is way too long to get into on this show. But it was pretty darn remarkable. And then I had started having paranormal experiences. And this is truly just about the case for everybody on the team, the investigators, that it's because something happened to them and they just can't leave it alone. They gotta investigate what happened. And so as I got older, got the time, I wanted to know more about what was happening because I knew there was something going on. And I wanted to go down that road and find out why are these things happening. And speaking of Jeff Stewart, I met the team. I was up at in St. Albans. I went to a conference and I saw Jeff's table set up for Paranormal Investigators of New England, and it was like, how can I be a part of this? I want to get on board with this. And he said, well, we're full, but I'll take your name, put it in a notebook. And sure enough, a few months later he called, and I got on the team. And then it was actually just a few months after that I became director. They had a little bit of, you know, a team breakup thing, and he was actually busy with children, so I kind of took it over, and it's been fun ever since. But most people have some sort of experience that lent themselves to pursue it, to go down, you know, for a personal journey, and then realizing that other people need help, and they know the trauma that people are going through by the time they reach us. There's trauma there, and they want to help. So that's the short version.
Well, both stories from you, Karen, and Betty, like, you know, that's basically what happened to me. You know, like, I used to watch, like, the Ghost Hunter shows, and then once I started to have my own experiences, it was kind of like, what's going on here, you know? And then I tried to do, like, what they did, which is try to debunk it. And once I couldn't really debunk a couple, that's when it really started to make me wonder, like, oh, you know, like, maybe there is more to this, because, you know, how it is sometimes with TV, they just make it for the entertainment purpose, and sometimes you can't tell if it's real or fake.
Yeah, I think at some point, when you're at that point, you've got to either validate your sanity, that I did see that, I did experience that, or you've got to dig in and find out, you know, is maybe this is all fraudulent, maybe it's not real. So I think I did it to validate myself as well as others, because it was an unanswered question.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And, you know, some of the stories that I grew up hearing from, you know, my grandmother, who's, you know, spent 2 days a week in church, and, you know, just these, they were true stories to her, and they were kind of mind blowing, some of the stuff that happened and coincidences. And so, you know, knowing it wasn't just a, oh, this is a scary story, let's get spooked. Like this, like what happened that makes this occur? For example, you know, a great second uncle or something like that. He was in the war, flying in the war and World War II, and his image appeared on my grandmother's brother, appeared on my grandmother's mirror one night when she was in bed, and she was so startled, she actually called out his name, and then it faded, and it was maybe 24 hours later that a telegraph came through that his plane went down, and he was never found. So just, you know, hearing that story, you're like, what causes that? You know, so always had a healthy curiosity.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's always better, good too with, if like, different people almost saw the same thing that you saw. So, which in that case kind of makes you go, okay, so maybe what I saw is real versus, your mind, or you trying to think like, oh, just your mind trying to play tricks on you. But if it's happening more to different people, whether you know the person or not, maybe, and I find that to be, that kind of sparks your mind to open up more, to be like, so what did I see or hear or feel or touch, you know, like, it's, and in that case, mirrors are like, I forget the word in right now, but I know mirrors come into play a lot with the paranormal. You usually hear sometimes where, like old rundown houses, or even if somebody is occupying it, you hear like mirrors are covered up, and it's almost like, well, what did they see in that mirror then that made them want to cover it up? Or is it be like just an old mirror that's just dusty and, or trying to not have it be dusty?
Exactly. I think a lot of people feel that mirrors are portals.
Yeah.
And there's got to be something to that, because there's a lot of stories that go along that line that that follow that, you know, portal theory.
Exactly.
So
probably not the smartest choice at an antiques market.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so in theory, though, if memory serves me right, too, but if you, I forget if it's, you see it, and like, if you see something in the mirror and then you cover it, you basically trap it in the mirror, or is it the other way around? So like, if you know something's in it, but, and you don't see it, but you know there's something in it, you can then cover it. I forget how that works.
I don't know. I don't think I've heard that. Have you, Karen?
I think the covering, I think the covering more has to do with religious beliefs.
Okay.
Different, you know, grieving issues. I mean, that may be what you're thinking of. For us, it's nothing, you know, that we use any kind of technique. And, you know, we have had clients that have felt they've had paranormal experiences in a mirror or whatnot. I mean, other than the story I just told you, I mean, it's probably few and far between that we've had anything like that on cases. But that, I think, is more cultural related.
I think that was also due back a long time ago when people died, and they would cover up the mirror for, I think it was 3 days or something like that. If my memory serves me right, it was something to do after the passing of someone so they could not come back or get caught in the mirror.
Yeah, it's great.
But very rare do we ever run across that now. There are certainly many types of hauntings, but that one isn't too common.
Yeah, which is good, because, you know, I mean, we see those horror stories all the time about mirrors, like, you know, Oculus, if you guys ever seen that one. That's a very interesting mirror movie. Then you got Mirrors 2, I think, and a couple of other different bunch of, like, films that portray mirrors in a weird, I'd will say, portal way, or if not, somehow the mirror kind of manipulates time even with these horror movies too. But then again, that's Hollywood. So
yeah.
Yeah.
We just mentioned that there are different types of haunting, which I guess that would be a nice little segue for a minute, because as I told you, Betty, went through the email, like, I was actually getting these random messages at times where somebody will be like, example, I'm not going to say the name, obviously, but they'll be working at, they'll be working their job doing like a house care or like, you know, just cleaning up the, some room, and they know that they set something down or they feel something in the room. And, the first thing they say in the message is, I think there's an evil spirit who runs this room and whatever. And I'm just like, okay, can you please explain to me why do you think it's evil? Well, it keeps taking my things and making them disappear or show up in random spots. Well, maybe, let's back up. Has whatever the spirit is, had it harmed you? Had it scratched you? Had it, like, touched you in any weird way to make you feel like it's evil? No, not really. Okay. Have you found all the stuff that have disappeared and misplaced to be put somewhere different? Yeah. Well, to me, this almost sounds like, you know, like a jokester spirit. To worry yourself on, because it's just basically letting you know that, hey, I'm here. I'm just, you know, fooling around with you because, you know, it's just that weird little game that they play. I don't really know how much more they can, how much I can really say more to that. But I mean, as long as you're not, you know, you're not having like these weird nightmares lingering over you when you fall asleep, or you're not waking up with scratches, or you're not getting scratched at that rate, and you don't smell these, you know, these weird, awful, rotten smells, I think you're pretty much fine. But I guess where this conversation is, I'm trying to say is, so what are some signs between having a, like, a good spirit versus like an evil spirit? I know I kind of probably went into that, but what are some other signs?
Well, you know, I want to preface this, Paul, by saying that when I got into this, I pretty much, like most people, grouped spirits and ghosts all into one category. And I think that was the biggest eye-opener, the biggest learning curve I had, was that there are so many different types of spirits, so many different types of ghosts, so many different types of evil, that I see now how naive I was. And it takes learning this. So it is natural, I think, for people to feel that initial scare. It's evil. It's this or that. And I've learned to kind of break it down myself, and maybe everybody has their own opinion, but you have the ghosts, which to me have no level of consciousness. They go up and down stairs, they do something, but they're not interactive. They do not have a level of consciousness. You have spirits who will interact. So that's a whole nother level. So you're kind of like, I divide it in my mind. What are they capable of? And that kind of puts them in a bucket. Okay, so we got a level of consciousness. What can they do? Well, are they, like you say, are they scratching? Are they hurting? We've had investigators get everything from burned to poked to scratched to
hair pulls.
Yeah, hair pulls and pass out. And when you start, when the level gets up there and you've got these things happening to people, that's not a good sign. That's when you can start going down that road. Like you said, that there is, enough there that enough there that says it wants to do harm. So now you're starting to go in that bucket. And that's when you got to start being careful. And you've got to start being careful with your investigators of who wants to go in that bucket, in that direction. Because not everybody does. But there are definitely, yeah, you're right. It depends on the level it presents to you. whether it's nothing, there's no consciousness, whether there's a consciousness, whether there's consciousness plus evil attempts or, you know, malicious attempts. So it really is kind of a ladder that you're going up. And that really is, to me, is basically it. I don't know, Karen, do you have a thought?
A lot of it, too, is you could have 10 people and you could have the exact same paranormal activity happening in all 10 people's homes, and their perception of what is happening might differ completely. So you may have one person is like, okay, you know, my shower curtain's closing. This is this and that's happening. Oh, it's, you know, it's Grandma Judy from, you know, who died. You could have another person that feels, oh my God, this is evil. They are, you know, opening the shower curtain while I'm, showering. They are, you know, watching me. I'm feeling like I'm being watched. So that person's perception is more, oh, well, this is, you know, a little bit more creepy. Then somebody else's perception is right off the bat, oh, it's evil. This is evil. There's only one reason that there's a spirit in my house. It's evil. And then you've got some that it's poltergeist activity. Was never even alive to begin with. It's just a noise. They call it noisy spirit. Just things moving around due to the energy of the home. Maybe you live near train tracks. Maybe you've had teenagers that brought that crazy energy into the house. So a lot of it too is the perception that the homeowner is giving you, which is why it's really important as an investigator that we interview on the phone. We show up at your house, take a good look at your house, and just see how many, you know, paranormal books and videos you have laying around. You know, are you already programmed that this activity is not, you know, good or non-evil? So I think that has a lot to do with it too.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Betty, I actually want to go back for a minute because I like the way that you just put ghosts and spirits. So ghosts, the way you describe your take on ghosts, it almost reminds me of the residual haunting format.
Correct.
And then spirits is the intelligent one. So for those that may not know, what is the difference between a residual and an intelligent haunting?
Okay, so we decided that residual doesn't have a level of consciousness and it's just performing. It is a imprint of energy, repetitive, that is just going through the motions. So that's your residual. You can't interact with it. It won't respond to you. Did that answer that part of the question?
Oh yeah, definitely.
And then okay, and then this intelligent spirits were okay. That's when we can get into the fun stuff. We can do Q&A. If they participate, we can do EVPs. We can do all that we want, and that's where it gets to where we can give actual data back to the client. Okay, this is authentic. We have this recording. We have, you know, so there's something active in your household that we can present back to you. Because just as a reminder, we are a data-driven team. So we need to provide that data back. And that's when we have, you know, unless we catch something on video, which is extremely rare to none, of a residual, but a lot of times we can capture EVPs or something moving on video, and that's when we can give data back. But
you can still capture evidence if it's residual, you know, footsteps, doors opening and close, you know,
true.
The energy, it just does not interact with humans. But when we get EVPs that sound like there's a response, that's intelligent to be able to get an answer to a question or some kind of a signal or sign that they're reacting to our questions or our presence.
Yeah, exactly. And you hear that a lot with like historical places, even like your own home. You know, it depends on who or what the house history is. I mean, it could be the old owners still trying to, you know, clean up their house, or what is assuming their house, I should say. Whether this might actually have to go into its own, like, question too, but sometimes spirits don't even realize that they've been dead for so long. But then again, that kind of makes it more interesting of maybe they do, but they still think it's their house. I mean, I don't know how that would work, but anyway, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff when it comes to intelligent haunting, where, you know, that's where we can get, like, the door slammed, the question, the answer to the question that we get, and or ask, I mean, I'm sorry, and just so much more. Like, we can have them interact with stuff. We can have them light up the flashlight, light up the EMF, and so much, really so much to really help capture proof that there is intelligence. And then back to Karen, where she's talking about the poltergeist. Now, Karen, how often would you say a poltergeist is a noisy spirit compared to possibly poltergeist activity that is coming from an actual living being?
You know, very interesting. I don't have the exact answer to that. I do know that we've had a couple cases where the activity seemed very poltergeist in nature, but when digging into family dynamics and things going on in the home, stress levels, trauma, things like that, sometimes around teenage girls, a lot of time, we were finding that, at least on two cases that I know of, what seemed like poltergeist activity seemed to coincide with a lot of stuff going on in a home. And so tackling that, you know, I feel like on both cases, we really didn't get much in activity, seemed to really happen and occur for just them, not us, which is not unheard of. And that's in a case where we advise a little bit of maybe you cleanse your space, maybe you try to reduce the stress level. We don't have any data as to answering your question, which is poltergeist, like, authentic noisy spirit versus what might be brought on by the energy of the home. That stuff's hard to answer, that type of a question, but we definitely have had cases where all signs pointed to stress and trauma within a home.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. It's always a fascinating conversation about poltergeist anyway, because I'll share an old, like, story just a little bit to maybe help this conversation out a little bit, and then I wouldn't mind hearing both of your opinions on what you think happened here. So back when I was in fourth grade, and this is a long time ago, I forgot what year it is, but anyway, so one of my friends was on the Thomas Dairy Farm, which sadly the Thomas Dairy shut down, but at the time that was a one family house, and I used to go there for you know, sleepovers, birthday parties, and etc., hang out with other friends even, and we would almost seem to be getting weird activity all the time, or if not all the time, but it seemed like it occurred every so often, I guess I would say, but it just, like, it seemed to be a continuous thing. So anyway, one of the stuff that used to happen to us is obviously we would have the bedroom door locked, and then we would be watching a movie, trying to get tucked in to go to sleep or whatever, and then that door that is supposed to be locked would be swinging open. And we're trying to figure out why, because there's no wind. There's no way the wind could be doing it. And he's on the second floor. So we were trying to debate, well, maybe somebody snuck up the stairs. But we tried, you know, doing the same thing, trying to do, like, quiet stepping down and up the stairs and maybe kind of doing like a slight jog a little bit, just to see like what type of noise it would trigger. But every time the noise, you could almost hear it, or at least feel like a vibration of like your foot connecting to the stair, which would kind of, you know, send off that weird vibration, I'll just say, where you know somebody's coming up the stairs. It's almost like if you shut the door hard enough, the house will kind of shake a little bit. But so that's another thing that happened. One of the most bizarre moments, I will say, that has happened to us was his birthday. So our main friend who did live there, he was sleeping on the bedroom wall side, but he was next to his window, which, because he was one of those persons where if it's not a fan hitting him, he's got to at least be by the window. Our smallest friend was in the middle, and then I was at the end of the bed. By the time we woke up the next morning, he was in the closet. My friend at the window was in a closet, was in his bedroom closet. I was over by the window, and our friend that was in the middle was like where I was supposed to be.
That's
so
strange.
Yeah.
That is. A little curious on the window. Do you think it came into play at all with the door opening or anything? You said your friend liked a window or a fan or something. I'm sure you debunked that.
We tried. Yeah, we tried opening the door. Opening the door with the window open, or, you know, to that effect, to maybe see if there was like any wind, to see like if the wind was strong enough. But this was like a night where there was really hardly any wind. It was probably like a July night where I wouldn't really say high wind would be involved, but I mean, it's hard to say, especially if it's like a thunderstorm. But I mean, we've locked it. We've even been on both sides of the door to try to see if we could push it just a little bit, and it would still not budge open. We tried a fan even, like, on both sides, too, and it seemed like the lock was sturdy enough to keep that door shut.
You also mentioned a friend's birthday or somebody's birthday at that time?
Yeah, it was celebrating his birthday, yep.
So that could be a clue. And that's what you do, is you start gathering the clues, of course, and looking for patterns,
mm-hmm.
looking for other associated activity. And did that happen on certain days? And what's the history of the house? Who died in the house? But there's definitely, it sounds, you know, if it wasn't the wind, then you certainly have got something going on. But that's what we would do, is start gathering those clues and actually ask the client to keep a log if it's continuous, to see if we can find a pattern before we even go in. And sometimes that pattern will include certain people that it's happening to, because it's involved with them. We wouldn't want to remove those people from the investigation. If it is poltergeist or related to them in some manner, we'd include them on the investigation and actually use them as a trigger.
Mm.
So all of you woke up in different spaces?
Right.
And in that, when you woke up that morning, did you all look at each other like, what just happened?
Basically.
Yeah, so we would want a history, you know, has this ever happened? Obviously, this was a kind of a fluke that multiple people were sleeping over due to a birthday party, but we would certainly interview the boy that lived there, you know, has this ever happened to him before? It's funny, the moving of people around doesn't sound poltergeisty to me. It sounds...
That's bizarre.
That's bizarre. That to me sounds more intelligent spirit shuffling you guys around. But super interesting. I would love to.
And were you put in a trance and, you know, body taken over or something that extreme? Yeah. Boy, that would be interesting. I wish I could have had that on film. I would love
exactly.
to see that.
Oh,
that's a good story, Paul.
It's time for a reunion. We'll come in with cameras.
You guys go. You all pretend to have
y'all
a party.
You all pretend to have a sleepover.
Yeah.
That is interesting. That's unusual.
I've never heard that
before.
Yeah, it was the most, it was so weird. Like, we tried everything to even debunk that, like, that theory of waking up in different places. But the way we figured is, even if our friend wanted to get up to use the bathroom, the way he would have to have done it was he would have had to somehow, you know, stand up just right to walk over our friend in the middle and then somehow get over me. And then we were thinking, well, maybe he could have gotten from the side, but you would still feel him getting up, we felt like, you know, because if you're trying to get up, even if you're trying to maneuver yourself to even to the end of the bed, I'll just say, you're still feeling that force of the bed moving, kind of shaking, and we couldn't even feel that. And then we were thinking, like, well, if I moved to the window, either A, I would have squashed the kid from rolling over on him, or B, I had to, like, somehow move Justin, and because that was his name. I actually talked to him once on the podcast here, because we were sharing old memories, and this was one of them. But we would have to move Justin, or I would have had to move Justin, and that couldn't have happened, because I would have had to, like, you know, either way, the kid in the middle would be the one getting squashed or something, one or the other. But we could never figure that out. Another thing that I will, two other things I'll mention, because since you just brought up the word clue, I'm kind of, so another interesting thing that happened one morning, and it was just me and my friend Justin. There was nobody else, just us two. His mother babysat some kids, but every time they would leave, the crayons and colored pencils, whatever they were using to color that day, they would always get packed up and get put into a bag to get brought out with them. Like, it never stayed at the farmhouse, I'm just gonna say, for the word in here, is that it's mysteriously weird when you can wake up one morning and there almost looks like there's melted crayons or some sort of wax. Like, we figured it was crayon because we could almost smell crayon, but on his mirror, we're going back to mirrors for a minute, but on his mirror, it wrote out I, and then there was like a symbol of a heart, and then my friend's name on the mirror, Justin. So it was like, I heart Justin. And it's just like, what in the world? Like, you know? And then the last thing I'll share, and we tested this theory, I don't know, I can't even recall how many times. It was just so weird. So us being boys, and especially like fourth, fifth grade, we can be, I will say it here, we can be kind of messy. I won't lie. Us boys are kind of messy when we're younger. So when we would get done playing for the day and et cetera, we would take our shoes off and stuff and just throw them in a corner. There's been multiple times where we could literally keep that pile of clothes that we were wearing the day before in that same spot, go outside for a while, and nobody is in the house at the time, where we can go back upstairs later on in the day, we'll just say like maybe 4 hours later, everything that we had in that pile that we made of like all our stuff, our shoes or whatever, would get chucked into his closet. Almost like somebody literally picked them up and just threw them in the closet.
Wow, that's amazing. That is that the same house? All this happening in the same house?
This is the same house, yes.
We must investigate this house. That's my first thought. That's amazing.
Where is this house?
That is very active, and that is something with a lot of potential, spirit that has that ability is very strong.
That strength to
And you gotta wonder, Paul, if all this happened to you and your friends, is there a bigger picture that it happened to you because it set you on a life path? And that, when I sometimes step back and go, was this, you know, and that's going down other rabbit holes and things, other, you know, but did this set you on your life path purposely?
There was yeah.
So that's just a little thing to think of.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, well, so here's the kicker. So speaking of like poltergeists and stuff, so a couple years later, I think this was about as soon as he was going to hit freshman year, I want to say, him and his family moved, so he was no longer in that house. No activity ever happened again after they left that house.
The new people?
No activity to them or no activity in the house?
Both.
Because you knew who moved in?
So here's another kicker. Apparently, that house got turned into what used to be a one-family house, got turned into like a three-family house. Like, they divided it into three apartments, I'm going to say. And then he ended up moving to a different town, but he never really had anything happen again, like around him or even with anything. So my theory was, maybe if it was a poltergeist, I wonder if it was related to his sister, because he did have a sister. And on his podcast episode that we did together, he did mention that his sister would sometimes see like a candle floating by, like on its own. But other than that, you didn't really hear too much.
I've heard that claim before.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really know.
We're wondering if we investigated this house.
Because I distinctly remember a claim like that. But is this home in Vermont?
Yeah.
You know, we're based out of Vermont, Paul.
Yeah. No, I'm just yeah.
Yeah, you know, but I guess that's another conversation. Yeah. But
I was like, wait a minute, I just remember writing that down in a synopsis of a case.
So you know, it could be her or it could be the house. So you're whittling down the list because it wasn't him, or it obviously could not travel with him. So yeah,
right.
Wow. And the energy of that person at that time at that space sometimes creates that, and when that mixture gets blown apart, whether somebody moves or somebody sells a home, then that energy may dissipate. You never know.
Well,
kind of like a perfect storm, you know?
Right. And that was the other crazy thing, is sometimes her sister wasn't there, but yet the activity was still happening. So we couldn't really quite figure it out. That's why we were trying to figure out if it was his sister, but then when she's not there, it's like, well, you know, what is it? Is it like a spirit that knows that we're there and just fooling around having fun, or is it just like a lingering energy of, we'll just say the sister, because I really don't know, but it would make sense where it's just so strong because, you know, the whole family lived there, so it's strong enough so that it can still
That's why it's really important. Not that we're asking anybody to take a diary for years and years and years, but when you start logging when something happens, who's present, what time of year it is, when you keep a log or a journal for a long period of time, patterns will emerge, and then you could, those are all clues. And maybe when this person is home, activities kicked up. When this person leaves, it dissipates. So it is interesting. Hard to know, but again, all clues. It's all a little bit of a mystery, which what makes this so intriguing. If every time you walked into a home and a white fluffy ghost floated in front of you, you get bored with it after a while. This is what's so interesting about paranormal. It's putting the science with, you know, technology and digging for clues and history and patterns. It's really, it's interesting to put it all together and hopefully get answers for folks.
Yeah. And the only other crazy thing that has happened there when I've been around, it not only do you hear like the phantom footsteps coming up stairs and stuff like that, and doors opening and what, et cetera, but the only other one that I can really think of that is really weird, and we actually got in trouble for it because we were young, and we'll just say young and stupid because, you know, that's basically like what we were back in fourth and fifth grade. But I mean, this was another one that we tried to debunk, and this is one we can just not figure out. But the last thing I'll share with this same house is, so sometimes if we were playing music, we would kind of forget to turn off the radio, the CD player, whatever was playing. And as we went downstairs, you could literally hear the volume almost like it was turning up to be higher volume. But then when we would go back upstairs to investigate, it was almost like the volume went back down to what we set it at. And we did this a couple times. At one point, we even had... I stayed upstairs and my friend went downstairs and the volume never even changed. But as soon as both of us left to go downstairs, it was almost like there was a party going on in the house. And that's when we got in trouble because the music was too loud to the point where people could hear it outside the house.
That's crazy. It's almost like it's a combo of a trickster and intelligent, you know, it's kind of like just messing with you.
Yeah.
And how perfect. Young boys. I mean, perfect target.
Yeah, exactly. They can take all the blame.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I don't know. I mean, I just remember like going there because it was almost like, ooh, what's going to happen this time? You know? And then later on, as we grew older, we talked again and we're just like, I really wish we were like, you know, we could just go back in time and just tell ourselves to go ask our parents for like a camcorder or something, just so we could just catch everything that we got. So we could maybe at least show the evidence later on down the road. I mean, I don't think the quality would be as great as technology has become now, but I mean, it still would be interesting to have something to back up the claims. Yeah. So yeah, that's really like the weirdest thing that's happened to me besides, you know, going into like my own investigations and stuff back when I used to have like my own little paranormal group. So I guess we'll slide along to the next thing real quick. So going back to where we were talking about the good spirits versus like the bad spirits, so what kind of techniques could someone use to help them with like an evil presence in their house, like I guess with protection or something?
Well, it's best to call if you really, truly, I would have, first of all, someone come in to say what level you're at and not make that assumption on their own. I would also not have them interact with it by calling it out on their own. But as far as protection, I do my own thing. I have elixirs and salts, and because I tend to bring stuff home from investigations and some of it is not very nice. I do have my own rituals that I go through with what I say and doing the cleansing sage or Palo Santo wood. And then using everything from black tar to black salts or, you know, different types of elixirs that I use depending on the level. Putting crystals above the doorways. I mean, it all depends. You know, I'll go full crazy on it if it's something that I really want to keep out. And then sometimes I will ask a medium to tune into my home to find out to see if they can feel anything. But that's just something personal that I do. So we don't do removal of spirits for clients. We're that step in the ladder that's, you know, people want to know if they're crazy or if they have something or can we capture anything. We're that, and we supply them with that information. We can be helpful in making suggestions, We know some contacts, but we do not take it upon ourselves to do that removal process because that's something you can't guarantee and commit, you know, that's something. And it depends on, you know, are the people spiritual? You know, do they, are they a certain religion? Is that going to apply? There's so many things that play into it. Are they practicing some kind of a cult at home? Is that what brought down? I mean, there's so many, you have to, it's a big bucket of stuff, and you've got to figure out what caused, if you can, what caused it, or, you know, what's the nature of these people? So it, your removal process isn't all a one and done thing. It depends on what brought it in. Mm-hmm. Was it some sort of practicing thing, or was it something associated with the home? And then what is their belief system? And, you know, sometimes you bring in a priest and a priest makes it, they do their thing and it gets worse. Sometimes you bring in a priest and it helps. So it also depends on their belief system. You wouldn't bring a priest into somebody who was an atheist and think that they're going to, some magic was going to happen because they don't believe to begin with. So there's got to be an intent to believe or, you know that your removal process is going to apply. You know, I don't know quite how to say it, but it depends. Your removal would and protection believes is all in your belief system, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess I was just saying that as a way for if somebody, because, you know, everybody usually asks, like, oh, what do I need to do to protect myself? I think somebody followed me home. It's like, well, you know, you could always use red brick dust to kind of go yep. along your doors and windows. You can use sage. But then I think that kind of falls into the category of interacting with it in a way, because usually if you use sage, you got to basically tell it to leave your house. You're not welcome here.
But I don't think that's interacting with it. I think you're demanding it to leave. Interacting, I think, is a little bit different where you're not just telling them something. You want them to give you answers or, you know, tell me what you want.
Claiming your space is
a little bit different.
A lot different than communicating and welcoming and, you know, doing EVP sessions or, you know, trying to record in your own home, that kind of thing. Demanding your space and saying, we only want, you know, love, light, and happiness in this home, or however you perform your blessing, I think is not considered interacting.
No. Yeah.
Fair enough. I didn't know if that was like considered interacting or not, but either way, I thought you were still like engaging with it technically, even though, yes, I do agree. You're basically trying to claim your space too, which kind of falls into that category of what I was saying before, where sometimes spirits don't really realize that they've passed on and they sometimes need to move forward, go into the light or, etc., depending on what is going on with this entity, I'll just say, because you just never know what you're really dealing with sometimes. Oh, God, how do I want to say this? Like, when you were saying, like, practicing different things where it could be an occult or something, now, I've always tried to figure this one out, and I'm kind of curious on what you two take on this. So how do you guys feel about, or... Yeah, how do you guys feel about, like, you know, the Ouija board, the spirit boards? I find it very fascinating that, you know, Hasbro, you know, made this board for children for, like, what is it, like, 6 and up? And then they're not really, at least I haven't seen it in a new version, but then again, anybody that's listening can correct me too if they know what is going on nowadays. But I remember when, like, my mother got me a Ouija board from Hasbro, you know, I don't ever recall instructions of like how do you properly open it, and just like you properly have to close it, you know.
They certainly didn't do that. No, there was not in the instructions. I think it was a whole different mindset.
It's interesting you bring that up, because we just had this conversation last on a case we just had. So I'll let Betty.
Okay. I think we have different thoughts.
We have a little different thoughts on that.
And to me, at the Hasbro company, they have nothing that they're sprinkling magic dust over these boards to give them magical powers. To me, it's a paranormal tool. And you can do it with paper and a pen. You can do it with anything, and it's a tool like any other, but you normally wouldn't think of it unless you have, like, oh, on a Ouija board, now we got intent, we got the tool, and you put it in the hands of kids, and they're calling anything in. And I think that's where it is, the process in these kids with different personalities, different, you know, coming of age or whatever they have going on. And the process, I think, to me, it's not used properly. It's a paranormal tool, something they normally wouldn't be doing. And you're giving it to people who just want to have a good time. Same thing like going into a cemetery. That's now the cemetery is a tool. You got graves, you got dead people. And yeah, you got people who want to have a good time. So to me, it's just a tool. It's nothing within the board itself. And that's just my thought process.
I'm a little bit more uncomfortable with them, only because I had an experience with one once that was a little unexplainable when I was in college. But I do agree, there's no paranormal powers that come from Hasbro. But like anything, when you set people in a circle and you set your intentions on communicating with the other side, and you now have a tool in front of you, pendulums, things like that. I I'm science-based, but there's something to, I guess, the experience I had, that something opens up, some kind of a communication. And I just feel like you're playing with fire a little bit. Again, if you're going to use it, protect yourself, set your intention, and don't open yourself up to just letting anything and everything come through. It's not a science. I mean, we don't know exactly what's on the other side, and there's just been enough paranormal claims of homes we've been to when Ouija boards have been used that lead me to believe that if put in the wrong hands, there's something to it. So that's kind of where I stand on the whole thing.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, no, I'm kind of like you there, Karen, where, you know, I've had something unexplainable happen, and then I've also witnessed a strange occurrence, I will say, where two buddies of mine, where one was technically a skeptic, but however, I think by the end of what happened, I don't think he was a skeptic anymore. But anyway, for some weird reason, one night, my main friend, again, he wanted to use the Ouija board, and I just said, no, I'm good. I'm not going to take it. I'll watch, but I am not going to take part of this. But he did, you know, he did the lighting of the candle to protect himself and stuff like that. And I think what really happened to be the downfall was bringing his other friend on board, who's kind of skeptical, but like, he's more of like, he just thinks it's all like, you know, a prank, it's a joke. But as the Ouija board session was going on at his old apartment, he, how do I want to word this? He, we'll just say, contacted what they claim to be named Jason, because as we were just kind of mentioning, we don't really know 100% what's on the other side. And at this point, we don't really know 100% what a Ouija board, who we're really talking to, if we even are talking to somebody. But anyway, so as we find out the name that they gave us to always call them, or it, is Jason, okay? Who claimed to be a little kid. We never got any confirmation of how old this Jason claimed to be, but what was fascinating to me is that this Jason was relieved to be talking to them, I guess will be the correct way of putting this, and I say that because it did not want to say goodbye. It wanted to talk and talk. It was almost like this Jason kid was afraid of somebody, which I'm wondering if it could be, if it was like, well, to say for the story here, if it was a kid named Jason, maybe there was an abusive parent somewhere. I'm just going to say a father. I'm not sure. But what got this to be weird, and basically the downfall with the friend of why I say skeptical to probably not anymore because of what happened, is this. So as they were trying to say, get him to say goodbye, to close this conversation, because that's what you're supposed to do with a Ouija board and spirit boards, is I'll never forget this. It spelt out, I'm going to say maybe in 5 seconds. It was really fast, but it went to H-E-L-P-M-E on the board in like 5 seconds, which basically spelt out help me. And it's just like, as soon as that happened, the skeptical guy lifted off his both hands and said, I'm done. That had to have been you. This is crazy, you know? And it's just like, no, dude, like, what did you just do? Like, why did you do that? Like, there's so many things wrong now. And
crazy.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't make anybody a believer, wouldn't it? So there, you know, there is something to them.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know what. Them.
Put them in a closet and leave them alone.
Put them in a closet and leave them alone. Yeah, I mean, if you collect them, that's another thing. But like, be smart about it, please.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, if there was something else that I wanted to say with this, but with the Ouija board. But I know I'm trying to get a hold of another friend of mine who actually collects Ouija boards, and we wanted to talk more in depth about them because he's got tons of, like, Ouija boards. And he was actually part of the, what do they call it? The day where in Massachusetts, I think it was, where they had that great big Ouija board come into play.
Interesting.
He attended
a lecture at the Mount Washington in regards to Ouija boards, and the guy had quite the collection. I mean, vintage and all kinds of stuff. And again, same sort of the stuff. A Ouija board itself is nothing but a toy. But it's how you use it. But some of the Ouija boards are really cool and just beautiful. It is a cool thing to collect. Not my thing.
But couldn't be attached to it either.
Right. Especially the old vintage ones. Yeah. You never know. Listen, could be, something so can be attached to an old doll.
Right. A Ouija board as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know what? That's actually a good segue for a minute to move into what people claim is a cursed object, or like as we were kind of putting it with the doll here, like a projection of a doll or something to that effect. So, like, have any of you two ever encountered anything like that? Like, with a client having, like, I don't know, didn't. The example where they went to like a flea market or something, they saw this really cool item, but then when they brought it back home, it was like the worst thing ever to have really kind of I don't really want to say worst thing, but it was like definitely things started to happen when they brought this thing back home.
Well, usually when that happens, they contact us and ask if we like it. And I've taken in a couple objects. and I have put a cam on them. Yeah. Usually if people know there's or feel there's something with something, they'll get rid of it instead of calling us in, or they'll send it to us or have us come pick it up, which we don't mind. We cautiously say, okay. And I put even a doll on a cam for months, and the investigators could watch it at their leisure to see if there was any movement, which is kind of fun to do, and see if anything was going on, and do different tests just over time, just 24/7, having the cam on the doll. I don't know.
I apparently own a haunted replica of a pirate ship, but I've never had anything happen. So, you know, I took it in and have held on to it for a year now, and nothing. But stay tuned for the Paranormal Investigators of New England flea market.
If you want anything sent to you, just contact us and we'll send you something.
That's amazing. Yeah. Which have this haunted possessed doll? I'll take one of those, please. I can film
it. Either that or go to eBay.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
We'll hang on to it for a trigger object on some case. It'll be.
Yeah.
Good, but yeah. Funny. Other than that, we've not actually validated any haunting of an object.
Nope.
Fair enough. Yeah, now, you know, I just always find it fascinating when I hear, like, a doll is possessed, because, you know, I've seen some, like, crazy YouTube videos and stuff where, like, the arm lifts on its own, or it magically falls off from where it was sitting, or it's magically moved itself from one place to another. Like, it's just so interesting, and one YouTuber that we watch believed that the possession of dolls, depending on how you treat them, they will be good to you, or, you know, vice versa. And I kind of found that to be interesting, because one haunted doll that this YouTuber had loved music. So every time they played music, this haunted doll would actually like move itself or move his head or something, just to kind of say like, oh, like I like this.
That's crazy.
And the other thing too is if a doll is in a haunted location, the spirit could be just manipulating that. The doll itself may not be possessed, but it's just being manipulated, which is no different than a kitchen cabinet door being opened, or, you know, a door slamming shut. Cabinet door and the door are not possessed. They are just happen to be manipulated by whatever spirit is in the home.
It's a good affirmation that the spirit may be approved of that.
Yeah.
It may not be the doll itself. So
that is true.
Don't believe everything you see on YouTube.
No, God, no.
Go back to science-based, you know.
Oh, yeah, the science-based, yeah. Well, so you guys actually keep bringing that up with the science thing. So, real quick, before maybe we get into maybe some of your favorite stories or something real quick, too, is, or maybe something else that we haven't covered that maybe you guys have thought of, too, but...
So, for example, we'll give you a couple of our favorite things that have happened using our equipment. And so, you know, of course, keep in mind the whole goal, most of the time when we do go into a home, it's to help a client, versus we don't just go in for thrills and all that fun. So our client is looking for something. And that is always one of the questions we're asking. What is the purpose of you calling us into your home? Some may be, I want you to prove to my sister that I'm not nuts, or I want to find out what's happening in this house, or I want you to find out if this is in fact a spirit or my, you know, whatever. So they're looking for results. And the number one tool we have really is us, our eyes, our ears, our skin. We can go in and say, yep, we feel something's going on. We saw something, we heard something, we felt something. But clients like data. We like data. That's why we own cameras and audio recorders and EMF detectors and you name it. But that is what we can give them at the end of an investigation. We can tell them stories all day long, but that's what we can give them, a recording, you know, that goes into our report. But some fun little stories of things that have happened where we had audio recorders going, and this is one of the funniest stories, and I still have this EVP to this day. And if your client, your listeners don't know, that's an electronic voice phenomenon, not heard with our ears when we are there, but on playback on the recorder, it comes back. And I just came across this recording, which is funny. Sometimes it's not all serious. It's not all doom and gloom, but we had a case where it was late one night. It was all female investigators. We will name no names because there is an embarrassing bit here, but we were in a historical location. I'm not going to name the name, but at about 1 a.m. after a long, quiet evening, one of our investigators might have had a gaseous sound happen, being politically correct. And of course, this being 12-year-olds at heart, we all start giggling. And you can hear us start laughing. And I actually asked the question, did you, you know, F-A-R-T? And we're laughing. And over the top of our giggles, you hear a male voice go, hell yeah. And then about 12 seconds after that, as we're still laughing, because we never heard the hell yeah, 12 seconds later, you hear a little ho-ho-ho. And I held on to this recording. It is great. And it just made us laugh at the fact that EVPs are my favorite, because that to me, you know, strictly on a recorder, there's nothing else it can be, tells you that ghosts have a sense of humor.
They do. especially boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys
forever.
And that was one of the best stories. Yeah. I love that one. I'm sure you have. Oh my gosh. Well, you're. Oh, Betty has a good one.
I do.
One from the Bigfoot. Bigfoot pulled the Bigfoot case in the woods of EVP.
Oh, well, it's a good one. It it's actually my most scary one. Will advise you that never try to do a Blair Witch thing in the woods, because it is scary. That's the scariest thing you can do. So, but there was activity up in the woods, and it was a client request to go up into the fields and go up in the woods. We had everything from Bigfoot to a grandfather and grandson's ashes who were spilled up there, and we saw in the daytime lean-tos like made by Bigfoot, and she sees the grandfather on the porch and all this stuff. Everything's happening. It's like a paranormal playground. So Jeff Stewart and I go up into the woods while the other investigators were staying down below in the fields doing investigating. And Jeff Stewart and I go up into the woods, and we're up there. And mind you, we don't have any protection, which is another mistake. You know, if you're going to go in the woods at night, for God's sakes, bring, I don't care if it's mace or a gun or whatever you're going to do, bring something to protect you.
Hairspray.
Because have a plan, you know? So Jeff and I are up there, and we got the recorder going, and Jeff says, so, okay, that's it. You know, we're going to leave if you make yourself known now, if you're there. And all of a sudden we hear footsteps coming at us bipedal, and it is a very thick woods. There's no way you could just go, you know, walking without a flashlight, or walking without making, you know, breaking twigs on this, or trees on the side. But this thing was coming right at us, and it was close. And Jeff's eyes got big as pies. I looked at his eyes, and they were huge. He was like, he couldn't believe it. And we started like going down the hill very fast. I don't want to say we're running, because that sounds very non-investigative, but we were in a fast trot. So later, when I listened back to that recorder said the best sentence I ever got: I am here, come back. And it was very monotone, very without a soul. It was very, very plain. And there were other recordings throughout the night on it where it was actually talking to us the whole time. And we didn't hear it real time, but it was definitely, wasn't Jeff or I. And it was definitely interacting. I was asking Jeff later down in the fields, you know, do you ever watch that show, something with the Expedition, I forgot the name of it. I was asking him about a show, and the guy, and Jeff was talking to me. When I played it back, I could hear the entity answer the questions that I was asking. And it just didn't, he was like, yeah, that's the show. I was like, what? So, yeah.
Was that the same investigation that Keith and somebody else saw?
Yep.
Yeah.
When we came down that hill, Jeff and I came at a fast trot down that hill. We got to the bottom. And at that very same time, they were running out of a shed. Or they came out of a shed. They both turned around and looked back. Now, the shed had a paneless window. So it was a window, but there was no reflection. And they both saw a head in the window. And they were smart enough to say, okay, let's write down what we saw. And so they wouldn't feed each other that. But they were, everybody wanted to talk at the same time because we were all like excited because stuff was just happening. And then I think Keith off to the side or somebody else off to the side was hearing something from one field to another, like almost playing with them and saying something. So it was just a bizarre night. But I was just dumbfounded at the evidence at what was happening to us all simultaneously. And it was actually probably the scariest night of my life.
Were there any like reports of like eye shine or eyes glowing or anything like that? No. Or was it just, what are we, just the sounds of like a bipedal thing just coming?
Just coming at us. But they did see the head very plainly in the shack. Both of them did at the same time. So something was, it was either more than one thing, several things, or was able to transmit that fast. I don't know what was coming at us, but it wasn't right. You can't walk. It wasn't an animal. I mean, it sounded like a human footsteps. But you couldn't, there's no way you could walk through that woods like that in the pitch black without any light and not like bump into something. It wasn't right.
No, it doesn't sound like
we went back to do another one and nothing happened.
Yeah. Like
you just never know. You just never know.
Yeah, and I'll touch on that with, the Hubbardston Battlefield real quick. So when I went to investigate with a little crew of my own, we went under like a full moon, the clear skies like at night that you would want, basically with all the stars out, everything. And the activity was just crazy for Hubbardston Battlefield. And we kind of wondered if it was because at the time we went a couple weeks after they did the reenactment there on Hubbardston. And then there was the time where, like, you know, Jeff invited me to come up with you guys to investigate Hubbardston because he saw like the evidence that I captured there and stuff. And, you know, it was weird. It was like, it was a very quiet night there. And it just kind of baffled me because it was just like, wow. Because, like, was it just because it was, I'm trying to remember. I don't remember a moon. I don't remember if it was, like, cloudy, but maybe it was cloudy. Like, I just remember it was just, like, pitch black, though. I think the only thing we might have ran into was animals. And then we went inside the building and we tried like doing the spirit box or something there. But I know Jeff is, I think it was Jeff. Jeff was not really too sure of what to think of the spirit boxes. But there was something going on, but we couldn't really clarify if it was like like a intelligent spirit trying to communicate with us or what. Otherwise, the spirit box would just kind of quiet.
Yep. You never know. You never know. It's odd. Then it can flux like that.
That's right. And you don't know with like something like a battlefield if the energy ebbs and flows with time of year, you know, anniversary of a battle, things like that. I think I do remember the second time you went, you know, I was there in 2015. And I remember that evening there was a distant wedding. I don't know if you remember that. There was a wedding in the distance.
Yes, I do remember.
So we had shouts, we had fireworks, little things like that that can really completely destroy an opportunity to get a good investigation in, because now you're completely contaminated. And in a place that's as big as that battlefield is, it's difficult to get anything on camera. You know, IR does not go very far, so capturing anything in the dark is really tough. And then you take away the ability to get good audio. It's a tough night. I remember that. And so the fact that you had activity at one point, you might have had just the right, it was quiet, it was the right time, the energy was flowing, and you were lucky in a way.
Yeah, because not only did we check out the battlefield itself, but we actually went down to where the little cemetery is too, and captured some interesting things there, which one of us was thinking might have been an interaction with possibly a little girl. We weren't really quite sure, but we were asking if this was a child, if you could make the EMF light flicker, like, just a little bit. And it was flickering, where it wasn't being, like, a solid light, because I think, if memory serves me right now, because I don't have the video pulled up to really confirm this, but I think it was supposed to be the second light that was kind of flashing a little bit. But before I even said, like, can you make the white flash, I think I'm pretty 100% sure that there was no flashing at all until after I said that. It was almost like, you know, it wouldn't, if it was like a kid, it was almost like, oh, I'm sorry, am I touching this, you know? And then it's just like, no, it's okay. Go ahead and, like, you know, make it flash. And then it would, like, flash in. It was just almost like, oh, I can, like, make this flash. I'm not going to get in trouble.
It's interesting.
I still don't know. I also was reading before we went there where the Helverton Battlefield is and that cemetery that used to be part of New York before it became actually Vermont land. But so with that in mind, I did pretend, like, I guess for the coincidence of maybe just seeing what I would capture in EVP form, was I was just pretending like I didn't know where I was. So I was just like, you know what? I'm kind of lost. I'm kind of lost. What state am I in? So the EVP I caught, which it was kind of hard, so I really had to do my best at the time for editing to raise the volume of the answer I got. And even though with raising it and trying to get the crickets out and everything else that was going on that night, it almost seemed like the answer I got as a response to my question of what state am I in, it almost sounded like somebody said New York. And I could not really confirm it, but it, to me and a few other people that I played it to, it definitely, to them, even thought this entity was saying New York. So, yeah. It was it was so interesting. Now, before I let you two go real quick, Betty and Karen, which, first off, it was thank you so much for this opportunity for coming on to talk with us about some of the hauntings and stuff. But is there anything that I haven't touched on that you guys would like to suggest or add to the show?
Well, the one thing I would like to say is for people, I think a lot of times they don't reach out to us because they're worried we won't find anything. And that's okay. It's really okay if you invite us into your home and we come away with nothing. It's not a waste of our time. It's it happens. And but then people feel like, well, now they think differently of me. I'm crazy, all this. We don't. We still appreciate the honor of coming into your home. We are available. We have a webpage, Paranormal Investigators of New England. We have a very fun Facebook page under Paranormal Investigators of New England. But don't feel hesitant or nervous about us. And we're older people. We're not groupies. We're when I say older people, I mean we're not
goth
kids. You know, this is not a groupie thing. This is something we take serious. We all have professional lives behind this. So I just want to assure people that we're there for the right reasons. And it's whatever your reasons are for calling us in, we'll talk it out. And results are whatever they are.
Yeah, and as you probably gathered, we've been in it for years. So you have many, many, many years of collective experience in this. We own pretty much any piece of equipment you've seen on any of the shows. We own it. And as always, we do this free of charge. We will do our best to get back to you as soon as possible and get you on our calendar as soon as we can. If it's urgent, we will obviously, you know, if children are involved and it's getting pretty scary, we will do everything we can to push it to the top. But again, we take it very seriously. We certainly always hope that folks that reach out to us are taking it serious. We've only had a handful of occasions where we felt duped. We don't appreciate that at all because, again, we're donating our time, our Saturday nights, our mileage, and the hours and hours it takes after an investigation. It's you're going to get us for 6 to 8 hours of your time, an evening in your home to try to capture what's going on. But then you also are going to get every second of every camera or audio recorder that was playing during that investigation reviewed so we can do the best job for you and provide you with your results. Mm-hmm. So, but again, go to our website at www.pi-ne.org and you can reach out to any one of us or go to the Facebook page.
Yeah, we have a contact us page on the website. Someone's around the clock monitoring that. So. But we're always glad to chat or come to your house. And
we love reviewing photos and videos. So feel free
except
to send
or them. I gotta say, except orbs.
Yes,
orbs. We're not big orb people. You know, Paul, orbs can be anything, most anything. But if you got one going by that's waving high and has a face in it, sure, send it along. But otherwise, your dust and your bugs and your moisture, we're good with that. We're not orb people unless it's something spectacular or something you see, like, in real time. Like, so, but besides that.
And dust off your outdoor security cameras. Like once a month, because we get lots of cobwebs swinging. So once in a while, just take the duster and clean off those security cameras.
Yeah. It's always, you know, that's always the thing. Like with orbs, like you said, it could be a bug. It could be this and that. And, you know, that's where it becomes really hard of what you're seeing. And yeah, and once you get like a weird face in him, then it starts to become much more interesting, I would say. And that's where it would, to me, feel like it's becoming more of the fact of, well, this is odd. And speaking of which, I'm trying to look up something now. I'm going to add this in the video of this episode just so I can show people what I'm about to show them, because I've always found this fascinating. And this was, I believe, at Hubbardton Battlefield. And yeah, here it is. Now, so this picture I'm about to show you guys real quick, let me share the screen here so you can see what I'm seeing. So here you are. I hope you guys can see this. But anyway, this is a random picture I took at Hubbardton Battlefield. I just randomly, for some weird reason, I looked to my right and brought up my camera and snapped the photo. And this is what I got.
Was there maybe a reflection off or anything where it's lens flare? That's usually green is very key to lens flare. So that is my first question. And this is, it's so hard for us to debunk something like this that, you know, could it be a reflection? Could it be this? Could it be that? You know, it could be paranormal, but is mm-hmm. just no way to really tell without other collaborating evidence or seeing it, you know, in real time, like moving. It could just be lens flare, although I see it's very dark and I don't know what it would be shining off from, unless it's something out there on the grave, you know, if you're in the cemetery, sometimes they have those reflectors. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why. So we're not keen on the orb thing.
Yeah, and finally, the last picture I'm going to show is the one that me and my friend kind of caught one night before we formed the paranormal group that we did. But anyway, so back when I was smoking, and this year will actually mark the 10th year that I quit smoking. But anyway, this picture that you're seeing, that I hope you guys are seeing again too, yes, is so on the left side is my left arm, and that is obviously cigarette smoke. And to the right there, I could actually feel whatever that is. Because what happened was, I told my friend to take a picture, not like at me, but like a little bit to my left, because I feel something. And this mm-hmm. is what we caught.
Well, that is interesting. You know, it could be. It could well be paranormal, unless it's the breath before that breath and the smoke is still there. You know what I mean?
Right.
But this, it's so hard to tell. Orbs are so hard to tell. And it's so hard to, you know, when people send stuff in, you know, they're so sure it's grandpa or right. grammy. And they get their hearts absolutely broken. And they're upset mm-hmm. that if I say, well, you know, it kind of looks like a moth or something like that. Yours doesn't there. I mean, that there's definitely something going on, whether it's smoke or, you know, cigarette smoke or paranormal smoke, but people do get their hearts broken because they want to believe it's who they yeah. think it is. And it's like, you got to break it to them slowly. And that's why we come in and do what we do. Well, let's see if it's grandma.
Right. Yeah, no, I just always found that to be like a fascinating picture, whether it actually is something floating like that or just my breath. But either way, I could feel something. Yeah. I know we always say cold spots, but in this case, it was like warm. I felt very warm at that moment right before that picture was taken.
And that's a clue. So,
yeah. And now, just real quick, is there a difference between cold and hot spots?
I've only run across
if you're over 50.
I'm just kidding. Female. I've only run across cold spots that seems to be the trend. I guess, you know, I have not personally run across hotspots.
No, hotspots, I would think, you know, if you're outdoors, it can be something as simple as something thermal, you know, a breeze came through. If you're inside, you're maybe near a vent. You know, it's tough. It seems like cold is much more related to the paranormal, because the theory is whatever it is that's trying to manifest itself, it's pulling the energy out of the air and therefore results in the air becoming colder, pulls the heat out. But no, it's mostly cold that we hear about.
All righty. Well, thank you two so much, Karen and Betty, for jumping on. And usually if you did get people messaging you, it would probably from me, because I usually get messages a lot back in the day where they're like, hey, do you guys do this, do that? And I'm like, no, actually I don't, but I know a group that would probably be able to help you, and I would always send traffic your way.
Well, thank you. Go Paul. We appreciate it. So that's great. We appreciate it. And again, anybody who's out there who's got an honest concern, we're here.
Yeah, exactly. And just real quick, I'll say it again. As they mentioned, so if you guys feel, if anybody here listening, is what I should say, feels like there's something going on and you really need a second opinion or a third opinion, please contact the Paranormal Investigators of New England at the www.pi-ne.org, and definitely hit that contact button, because that's what I did. And Heidi was lovely enough to talk with me and forward
She's my great. Message. She's
awesome.
So basically, yeah, I sent an email and Heidi sent that over, and then here we are talking. So I appreciate your time and everything, and I just
welcome. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Yeah, and hopefully one day we can try to figure out and I don't know, like maybe set up another investigation down the road. Hopefully, I don't know where, but that would be fun. I haven't really done one in a while, so I'll probably be rusty. So it'll be fun.
Hey, it's all good.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And for everybody else. Yeah, you're welcome. And for everybody else listening, thank you so much for your time of listening to this. Hopefully you find it fascinating with some of the stuff that we talked about. And if anybody has any other questions, maybe we can set up another chit-chat with these lovely ladies, and maybe we can maybe go into more details or something else that we didn't hit on this podcast. But until next time, keep your eyes open, because you just never know if an apparition will appear in front of you.